flying saucers are real.
They've seen the aliens buzzing our missile silos.
The UFO phenomenon, either we like it or not, is already very much part of our reality.
That caused a compass needle to spin and spin.
And that's where the whole seed for the idea of underground bases at Dulce was planted.
They had very large eyes, and you know, I found their stare extremely difficult to bear.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Podcast UFO for episode number 44 with Ben Hansen. He's from the show Fact or Faked, Paranormal Files on the Sci-Fi Channel. Great show. He'll be coming up after Michael Laup is with us for the news. Before we get started, if you're a big fan of Stephen Greer, you may want to skip through the news and go right into Ben Hansen's interview. Just a couple of quick announcements. If you want to contact me and rag on me for trashing Stephen Greer, my email address is martin@podcastufo.com. Just remember, if you're going to send me hate mail, you have to make a quick donation first. And what do you think about that, Michael?
It sounds like it's probably going to be cheaper than therapy for a lot of people.
That's true. That's true. And, you know, if I get enough hate mail, well, the podcast will pay for itself.
That in itself is a minor miracle. Having paid for quite a few podcasts myself, I know how that is.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, so what's up with the news?
First of all, this week we bring you an update on the recent video taken in County Cork of an alleged UFO. Supposedly taken late last year and released only last month, the silent clip has gotten quite a bit of attention on the internet. Latest reports, including one from Whitley Strieber, are branding the footage as a hoax. You can read more about the video through the link in our show notes.
You know, I looked at that video and it is kind of convincing, but you do have to approach, you know, most videos with skepticism. And until they're proven right, actually, I believe. By the way, when has Whitley Strieber gotten into giving opinions on videos? I thought he was sticking to the grays.
Well, yes. He, as I recall, actually presented the video to three experts that he knew. And they came back basically weighing in that it was a hoax. So,
oh, is it going to work on Russell Crowe's video, do you think?
Perhaps.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, the Shropshire Star has a picture taken by a local girl apparently showing a mysterious object in the sky, and they are asking for help identifying it. Local reader comments suggested it may be a shopping bag caught in the wind, but at least one reader adds their own UFO sighting. Check out the photo yourself through the link in the show notes.
Yeah, those shopping bags can be. I've seen shopping bags up in the sky. Made me look twice before.
And they can get some real altitude, too, which is... Yeah. Surprising.
I think some of them last for like 3,000 years before they biodegrade, which was a real smart move to make those things.
Well, you know, I can barely get them home without them splitting and dumping soup cans everywhere.
Yeah.
Admittedly, this is too good to be true, but Scott C. Waring at UFOSightingsDaily.com has released screen caps of Google Earth images that seem to show a floating circular object near the infamous Area 51. The white, almost featureless circle appears to cast a shadow under it as if it is a levitating object. The article, which is linked to our show notes, includes coordinates so you can check out Google Earth yourself for the apparent UFO. Did you get a chance to look at this yet?
No, unfortunately, I've been a little bit busy. Is it pretty convincing?
It caught me off guard. It's definitely not a lens flare, which is, you know, what we're so used to with these things.
How about swamp gas?
Is there swamp gas in the middle of the Nevada desert?
You never know. Ask the Air Force.
That's right.
Yeah.
And hey, if you're willing to believe the Air Force, then you might be interested in this offer. Any listeners looking to relocate may want to check the link in our show notes to the Mars One project. They're currently seeking applicants to populate a Mars colony. No experience necessary. The only catch is that it's a one-way trip. They have a few details about their plans, including funeral plans for potential colonists. Martin, did you get a chance to look at this one?
Yeah, I read a little bit about it. It's I've been thinking about going there myself and doing my podcast from there, actually. But, you know, it'd probably take like 3 months to get to iTunes.
You couldn't get a worse internet connection. That's, you know, right.
If they have Wi-Fi, I'm on it.
They're gonna be one of those Google Fiber town.
Yeah.
With the
I might start a Google Mars there. I'm not sure.
There you go. All right. And finally, Dr. Stephen Greer and the Disclosure Project have released more information on the Atacama humanoid. The tiny dried body is only 6 inches tall, or about the length of a dollar bill, and according to Greer, has human DNA. We have a link in the show notes to the latest release of findings. The news comes on the heels of the official release of Sirius, the long-awaited documentary from the Disclosure Project. Martin, you and I have seen the film. Any thoughts?
Oh, boy, do I have thoughts. But, you know, I do want to say that, first of all, if you're a big fan of Stephen Greer, just unplug the earbuds right now and fast forward it to Ben Hansen's interview. I'll try to be a little fair toward the end here, but I really, you know, bottom line is I think the movie sucked. I'm just going to say it just like that. You know, it starts out, it's all about him. He's sort of a cult leader, in my opinion. It starts out with him silhouetted backstage before a conference, and it talks about a dead man's trigger and that evidence will be released if something happens to Stephen Greer. He's one of the rare people. And so my dead man's trigger is, if something happens to me, it's probably from his too sexy for my shirt bodyguard is going to come after me. And by the way, the bodyguard in the movie, why does he have a mouthpiece? Who is he? Why is he talking? Shows him in one scene. He's standing there with a tight shirt on, and you see the automatic weapon strapped to him, and he talks about the little alien baby. Michael, I'm going to ask for your input too, but there's a whole bunch of clips from past documentaries added in there. At one point, they have a clip of the late Admiral Lord Hill Norton, and he's like answering a question or something like that. Like it's part of real time, like he's living and he's talking about the situation. And a lot of things Greer is kind of attributing to his efforts in the past as progress that has happened throughout the world of releasing documents and things like that. It's a very egocentric film, if you ask me. It's all about him. And then he tries to claim somewhere about mid-movie that it's not about him. I heard him say something like that. But anyway, Michael, what's your feedback on it?
Well, first of all, in all fairness, I did not finish watching the movie. The stream suddenly cut off a little over an hour into it. And
was that the bootleg version?
Yeah, I bought it at the swap meet. It kicked me back to the beginning. It wouldn't let me fast forward. And I honestly couldn't bear the idea of rewatching what I had seen. I don't know if people know this about me. I mean, I own a video production company. I've done commercial DVDs. I do a lot of corporate work, you know, fairly boring stuff. This video very much reminded me of corporate video. It's pretty dry. It isn't what the buildup said. It wasn't this like great feature film. It really was more the Stephen Greer story than, you know, amazing new evidence or, you know, any breakthroughs. The only kind of new things that were in there that, you know, some of the stuff about the Atacama humanoid, he's released on his website, and he was on Coast to Coast the other night saying, so it really was like a Stephen Greer biopic more than anything else. If it had been marketed that way, I don't think, you know, it wouldn't have caught me off guard the way it did, because here I am waiting for like this brilliant summation of why we should be convinced that there's contact going on or imminent, or, and it was really none of that. It was not fun to watch, and it was not interesting to watch.
Yeah,
on top of it,
where's the free energy thing that he was so concerned and got the bodyguard for in the first place, because he was afraid for his life because he knew about this free energy? You know, there was an interesting interesting breakthrough where a rotating disc magnetically lost 7% of its weight or something like that, which is probably future work, could really turn into something, but nothing really revealing. Now, I said in the beginning that I was going to try to be a little fair. One of the things about the DNA samples that were tested is the computer programs are not written for anything else but other than what we know. So, you know, there is a possibility, and I really do think that little humanoid is very interesting. It's such an anomaly. It should really be studied to see how this thing came about.
It is a creepy, creepy little thing.
Oh, I would have loved to have had it when it was alive and kept it in my shirt pocket and fed it birdseed.
Yes, no ill could have come of that, I'm sure.
There is a video. It's up on our website, and the Steve Greer fans are going to hate me for it. It's a little promo for the baby alien, and I'm going to play the sound clip between the end of the news and the interview with Ben Hansen. So that's basically it. Do you have anything else to add about the movie?
I would say if you believe in what Stephen Greer is doing, this movie's going to affirm all your thoughts, which is not necessarily a bad thing. You know, I mean, I'm not going to bag him for that. It's just that, like I said, it was made up to be something that it wasn't. But if you believe in what he's doing, I mean, by all means, stream it, buy it. This is a way to send him money and support him. However, if you have real questions about Stephen Greer and his work, this is not going to answer your questions. This is no more in depth than, you know, when you hear him on Coast to Coast or some other radio show. So I think if that's the case, you're going to probably feel a little bit ripped off by it. And even worse, you're going to be bored by it. I would give it a C minus, maybe even a D plus.
Yeah. You know, and again, Stephen Greer has done some really effective things in the past, but I do agree 100% the movie was more about him than anything else. Well, thank you so much, Michael.
Thank you for having me on, and have a good show.
All right. And stay tuned for Ben Hansen, and you're going to have to listen to this little clip first.
Greer and his baby, what a lovely way to say that you were crazy. Greer and his baby, well, the ET evidence is rather hazy. If we could have seen it when it was growing, see those big, huge, blinking eyes and happy nose. Crazy. He's a man in love with a little alien to fool ya. Greer's just crazy. You donate thousands now, he'll never screw ya.
That's right, folks. Just write that check. You can send it in now.
How are you doing, Ben?
Good. How are you doing, Martin?
Good. Thanks so much for joining us. And I love the show that you do, Fact or Faked. And I want to talk a little bit about that. But first of all, I know that you have a family connection with possible UFO ties. But how did you get interested in the subject of the paranormal and UFOs? And you have quite a background, too, FBI and all that. Let's talk about all that.
Okay. Yeah, my first interest probably, I trace it back to movies, actually. The first movie I remember seeing in a theater was E.T. My parents took me, and I remember kind of putting myself in the situation of Elliot and thinking, if I had encountered extraterrestrial life, what would I do? Would I want to be the person, you know, that protected him or wanted to go up in the ship or whatever? And I started clipping out newspaper clippings of UFO sightings, and I had this file. It was something that both interested me and scared me a bit. You know, my father brought me books that were beyond my reading level, but when my friends would come over, I hid the books because I didn't want them to know that I was into UFOs. From there, what happened was my father and I had planned some trips, you know, Area 51. The really? News had broken, you know, when I was in, I don't know, junior high or so, and we were going to go there, and that never happened. But I was still kind of, you know, I was very interested up through high school and college, it was mostly UFOs. It wasn't until we finally, you know, I was in college and started, you know, doing a little bit of the ghost hunting that I really got interested into the other stuff.
Mm-hmm. What exactly did you do for the FBI?
Well, I was an agent for the FBI. My specialty before going in was I worked for several years also at the state level doing child sex crimes investigations. So, you know, at the FBI, they run you through a lot of different squads. You know, so I was doing national security. I was doing, you know, criminal white collar stuff, a bit of everything. A lot of people ask, well, were you doing, you know, X-Files type things?
Yes, so, I could see that. I could see why.
I suppose if I were, that would be something I couldn't talk about.
Aha. Uh-huh. So can you talk a little bit about your grandfather?
Sure. My grandfather, he served, you know, World War II. He was with the Marines. And then when he was discharged, he went into the Air Force as a civil engineer. So he was based at Hill Air Force Base in Ogden, Utah. But one day he came home in 1965 and told my father, you know, look, I think he was 15 at the time. And he said, you're going to be the man of the house because I'm part of a special team that now I could be called at a moment's notice to go somewhere. And I can't tell you all the time where I'm going or how long I'll be. And my father said, well, do you mean something like an emergency, like a nuclear threat? And he paused and he said, well, something like that. So the first time it happened was in 65. And what we've been able to do is kind of trace, now it's pure speculation, but we've been able to kind of put together some of the dates where he was gone. And one of those in 65 coincided with the Kecksburg crash.
Really?
Wow. In Pennsylvania. So the very next day when this thing is supposedly being transported to Wright-Patterson, Grandpa flies out an emergency assignment. And his job was to take the workspace where they worked on projects and the computer systems and management and maintaining underground hangar systems. So, you know, why they'd have to bring someone in from out of state to do these things, again, we're speculating. But I feel that he was pretty close to some of the things there.
Wow. Now, that particular case, I believe there is some theory that it's a possible time travel from the Nazi era. Did you ever hear anything about that? I mean, that's one of the, it could be the bell from the bell shape.
Yeah, exactly. The witnesses describe it as being acorn shaped and similar to the Nazi bell. So, you know, I think they do know that they've got witnesses saying that it did make it to Wright-Patterson and came in through the back gate. So, which would make sense with the R&D development and, you know, back engineering that takes place there at Wright-Patterson.
Now, did your grandfather ever actually share any experiences, or did he keep his oath all the way to the end?
Well, the way it worked was this. My father also was very interested, like I was, in the subject. And so my father would go over there to the house, and sometimes they would eat lunch and watch TV. So this is when like Unsolved Mysteries was on and some of those, you know, UFO specials. And every now and then, you know, my father would ask him, is this true? Do you know anything about this? And Grandpa generally would just kind of laugh or say, but he kind of worked it out to where if he just kind of sat there and he said, that's interesting, it kind of let my dad know he's on the right track. Because if something else came up and he said, oh no, that's absurd, you know, he would deny that this was right, this was wrong. Well, he got pancreatic cancer, and finally it spread to his brain in the, you know, final stages of his life. And there were conversations throughout where, you know, at times, I remember when they went to a gymnasium, my father actually confronted him directly on. He says, I really need to know, are we alone? Were you involved in any of this? And he got up and he said, I think it's time we leave. And this is where he started really kind of shutting down. But when he was in the hospital, this was literally moments before he died. He turned over to my father and held his hand and he looked in his eyes and he said, we're not alone.
Wow.
And he knew that it was within the context of what he'd been asking him. So,
So
no, he did not, you know, share any details, but he kind of along the way confirmed this or that. And I do think, whatever team he was part of, you know, whether it was a response to, you know, new crashes or things they brought in, whatever it was, he was privy to, you know, some info.
Some really powerful stuff there. That's amazing. I want to talk about the show Fact or Faked. I've watched a number of episodes. The first thing I think of is that must be the best job in the world to be on that show. Are you enjoying it?
I am. It really is great. You know, I get to go places like Iceland or
no kidding.
I never would have gone to, you know.
Yeah, I mean, that part alone, when you guys, well, going to Australia or whatever. I mean, man, wouldn't that be nice? That is so great. Now, a couple of questions that come to mind when I think about the show. Have you ever had any backlash from, say, you figured out something was a hoax? One comes to mind of the gentleman that had a whole bunch of followers that claims he had this alien that he conked out, I guess, and brought home and put in the freezer. You kind of dispelled that whole thing as a hoax. And did people like him, like, come at you either on the internet or anything like that after that show aired?
Oh, for sure. For sure. You know, I thought, you know, if I had more time with him, if it wasn't just a, you know, that was actually a 45-minute interview I did with him. And the Jonathan Reed case, he was very cordial with us. He actually, you know, gave me a signed book when we left. But in all reality, I think he really played ball with us because it resurrected his story. And, you know, it was on its way out. And just by doing the show, we drew attention to it. You know, so his followers, he's got kind of a main group of two or three people who he travels with, and either at his direction or by themselves, they started posting these really hokey videos. They're probably up there and you can look at them, and they're just kind of mocking us and,
oh wow,
and very strange. And then on Facebook, you know, there's a series of long, you know, diatribes against us. And, you know, I get it. It was his livelihood. You know, he made a lot of money from this. And so if you've got all the time in the world to try to milk it some more, you're going to do that.
Now, have you ever had things happen the other way where you thought something was totally a myth and then you really questioned the whole situation?
Well, you know, and I've had cases that, you know, from the onset, you're kind of thinking this has got to be, there's no way this is just too good to be true. And you get there and you're really, for example, we had the Florida, case with David Eckhart. And this is where this man had put up, cameras in his bedroom because they were having these bright lights in the middle of the night. And, there's a, what looks like a creature, humanoid, that peeks around the corner of his bathroom. And, then they've got some things kind of floating in the air. And I thought, okay, for sure, this has got to be someone dressed up or a mannequin. And we showed how that could have been true. You could pretty easily fake it. Mm-hmm. However, I didn't get that vibe really at all from talking to this couple. I think I'm pretty good at, you know, detecting when someone's outright lying to me. And I just don't think like they're the type, and it just didn't really fit. So, you know, something strange might be going on there.
Yeah. I saw the show in Portland, Oregon, where a couple was walking along and they filmed what looked like a UFO or some type of light that sort of maybe even landed in the water.
Uh-huh.
And then you shot out Frisbees. You tried to replicate it. And basically what it boiled down to is they were being hoaxed. So a lot of times a situation where someone will get caught up in a hoax and they're not even aware of it. And those people are, you know, legit people, but who get caught up in a hoax.
Yeah. Those are the tricky ones.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm. You know, because you don't get a deception response from right. witnesses when they're not the ones who hoaxed it, mm-hmm. you know, and that happens a lot. We're seeing a lot of these Chinese lanterns,
yes.
A lot of people filling up garbage bags with helium and putting flares on the bottom. And a lot of people who have not seen a flare suspended or, you know, a Chinese lantern, it flickers, they can go on and off. And people who haven't seen that will go out there and they start recording. And these things make the news all the time.
Right.
Yeah. So it's kind of frustrating because if you only have the witness to talk to, they could seem very truthful and then you're really not anywhere further.
Yeah. Do you have to go through a lot of videos and images or whatever to pick out what the top contenders are going to be. And it appears in the show that you each do a separate project and then you present them at your little meeting there. Is that a real time-consuming thing?
Yeah. Originally, when we first, before we filmed the show and we were presenting it as a concept, it was mostly Bill and I who were finding these videos, and we must have seen every, you know, ghost video, every UFO video on YouTube at the time. Mm. And once we started actually filming and we were out in the field, they hired about 5 or 6 different full-time clip researchers to screen these.
I see.
So throughout the week, they contact us. We find some on our own. Some are given to us, through email and Facebook. And so we go back and forth. And when we get to the situation room, sometimes it's the very first time we've heard of it because the other person's been working on it. And other times we've talked about it a little bit. You know, so yeah, it's always a constant process.
What would you consider the most profound case so far that comes to mind?
Well, you know, concerning UFOs, what I really like to do is I love the historic cases. I think for however little it was, I feel that we did add some value to the knowledge base with the battle over Los Angeles.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. It was kind of debated back and forth whether, you know, this whole weather balloon theory, I think is very improbable. And, yes. You know, we showed how quickly when a balloon is hit, how quickly it drops. And that was something that I'd kind of wondered about. So I think that one is still in the unsolved category, and I don't agree with that theory. And then we also had the Heflin case, which, you know, in all honesty, I wish we could have added more knowledge to that, but I think that's a toss-up, in 1965. And I also like, we have had some brand new ones that we broke ground with, and I'm not sure that I would even categorize it as a UFO case at the moment, but we had a woman who seems to disappear from her bed in England. The bed sheets literally kind of dissolve into the mattress, and then she reappears 13 minutes later. And for whatever it is, I do believe the story of the couple, and I don't believe they hoaxed it. So we're either looking at an optical illusion or something very, very strange.
Wow. The more you dive into these things, the more you find out how many strange things there really are out there. And how would you say that your FBI background helps with this show in investigating?
More than anything, it's been my training in interviewing, I believe.
Oh, wow.
I was, before going to work for them, I'd worked for the state and combined, I've interviewed thousands of victims and perpetrators. And I think I get a good sense of psychologically when someone wants to tell you more or when they're hiding more from you.
Hmm.
And, so the interviewing, anyone who's part of an investigative group, it is so key. It's so important.
Sure.
You know, because this UFO cases were basically, they're historic cases. We're getting there after the fact.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you're going to a hot spot where you're, you know, actively seeing things, all you have, if you're lucky, you have some video or photo. But most of the time, you've just got descriptions from people. And so it's our job to extract that information. And, having good skills as an interview is very important.
That's right. I've talked with Dr. Bruce McAbee, who does research on UFO photos. And, you know, he basically says the same thing that, you know, you have the video or photo evidence, but that's only a small part of it. The witness is number one, you know, what you can extrapolate from to back it up, basically.
Right. I lecture on that topic specifically that, with all the, you know, our show focuses on video and photo, but it is only part of the story. And being that it's imperfect, technology, I don't think, can ever completely replicate or simulate what it's like to be there.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're missing a lot of information. And also it's not, we've seen so many images. If you're trying to convince somebody that UFOs exist or that the phenomenon is real, I don't think that videos and photo are ultimately going to do it. We've seen so many images that we're so used to it that it's not as impressive as it used to be.
I have to agree with you on that. You know, I had my own sighting, which is really the reason why I started this podcast. And if I hadn't had that sighting, you know, I would have just gone along my merry way and just thought, well, these are interesting and all that. But I would have never really taken it as serious as I do now.
Right. And sometimes it does take that personal, witness or sighting that for some people. And for me, I was already a believer that it was very possible. And, you know, after I had a few sightings myself, it sort of throws your world around for a couple of days. But after that, you're like, well, I already was, you know, kind of believed it. So I don't know if it's a paradigm shift.
Yeah, I've said before, I was on the fence, totally on the fence. I was never a total skeptic because I always had an open mind about all that. But still, there's nothing like seeing it, a little dose of reality to really get you involved in it. On the other paranormal things besides UFOs, what would you say was the most profound case that you've done a show on?
Probably the ghost hunting investigations, where I, as a child, never believed in ghosts. I was taught that they don't exist. You know, in afterlife, yes, but spirits that just hang around and haunt places, I did not believe in. And so in college, when I got a little bit of evidence of that, you know, doing these EVP sessions, the recordings where, you know, I have voices appear later, I even went beyond that. Within the show, I've seen objects moving by themselves, you know, and it's happened within the show, I believe, three times, three different locations where either it was just out of my view or I actually saw the objects moving by themselves. And it's quite amazing.
Hmm.
You know, and if you didn't have other people there with you, you might think you're crazy, but it happens.
This is all really interesting. And I know that there's a lot of controversy. I'm sure you've been following it on Bigfoot, you know, with the new DNA tests and stuff like that. And you've done a couple of shows on that, haven't you?
We have.
And one of them was basically proven that it was, or I think you did two shows that I've seen. And one, I believe you figured out had to be someone in a suit.
I think with Bigfoot cases, what's most interesting is that there is something to it. I believe that I've talked to quite a few people with very compelling stories that lead me to believe there is something to the phenomenon. Whether it's an actual living, breathing creature or something interdimensional, I'm not sure. However, I've done some research with videos. If you look at any Bigfoot video online, what we've statistically so far have shown is that you are about 2.5 times more likely to have Bigfoot walking from camera left to camera right, as opposed to the other way. So, you know, the implication is, well, either Bigfoot walks around in clockwise circles around people, or there's something maybe psychological that entices people to hoax the videos this way. And I thought, well, is it the Patterson-Gimlin film, you know, that everyone has in their mind?
Uh-huh. Right.
Is it that we read left to right in Western cultures? Is it right-handed people? And I haven't been able to really, you know, hone in on why. But the fact is, most videos are hoaxed by far with Bigfoot. And I do believe that there has not been, for me, a compelling enough video that you wouldn't be able to say simply, oh, that could be a guy in a monkey suit. Now, that doesn't mean it is.
Mm-hmm.
It really does not. I just think it's different than UFO videos, because with the UFOs, if you can establish that it's not CGI, then you have to also try to explain away why this object is moving in such erratic and amazing, you know, manner.
If you were to say to the average person that wants to go, say, sky watching or possibly in a hot spot area to film UFOs, what would you give them for advice?
Well, you know, there are a number of places around the country. There are some that have kind of commercialized this too. You know, you can go to certain ranches or things and, you know, pay money. And I honestly have not been to any of these where you have to pay and go, but if it turns out that they're great hot spots, sure, why not? But there are just about every state has some location where regularly these things are showing up. So I would go to one of these places, and you can take just a general, you know, regular video camera. A lot of stuff is captured that way. If you have the money, though, I would suggest people, you know, look into night vision, at least into a good infrared surveillance camera, something that has a lux, you know, enhancement. And, you know, I was so interested, and I went to Bushnell, their line of night vision equipment called Night Optics, and we invited them to one of our Skywatches. So they brought out all of this third generation night vision military, you know, spec scopes. And I said, I need one of these. So I, you know, emptied the piggy bank, and I bought one. You know, and after a while, they asked me to be a spokesperson. So I sell, you know, the scopes to both people who do, you know, it's great for ghost hunting because you can connect it to a camera, but also it really lightens up the sky, and you can see a lot of these satellite-type objects that we're seeing a lot of. So like a satellite will blink out and then reappear. It looks like a satellite, but then it starts doing these really erratic things. And if you're not looking up in the sky, the common person probably would not even see these things, you know, but night vision really helps enhance it, and you can record them. And so that's kind of what we're studying right now.
I know that a lot of things are picked up on the infrared. Now, this particular Bushnell lens you're talking about, does that have like the greenish color?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I sell, you know, Bill on our show used to sell, and the guy stopped making them, but he used to sell cameras that would look into the ultraviolet and the infrared range. And those were really cool because they also enhanced light that you could use for sky watching, but they were quite inexpensive. These guys that we sell, you know, they're anywhere from about $2,200 to, you know, $3,500. But it's well worth it because they do have that kind of greenish hue, and they amplify light by 40,000 times.
Wow.
So you can put all the adapters, the magnifiers on if you want. You can adapt it to your video camera, your DSLR or whatever. So we're looking at that spectrum, and we're also looking at thermal imaging. And I have captured, at least in one case, a triangular shaped object that I could not see with my eyes, but it showed up on the thermal imaging.
Is that right? So, and was that overhead?
No, it wasn't. It wasn't right overhead. It was probably about, I would say, no more than a quarter of a mile distant, coming over a mountain ridge.
Isn't that something? Do you think that there's going to be some type of disclosure? Have you ever contemplated that?
Yeah, the issue of disclosure is, it's a tricky one. I really don't know, you know, how it will come about. I think ultimately, yes, we will be aware of these things. But the problem is we kind of do this to ourselves. I think everyone expects, because technology is so great, that we expect that one day we're just going to be told and maybe have a video of, I don't know, an alien at the White House, you know, even meeting with the president. But I've always said, even if you did that and you film the whole thing all day and put it on the 10 o'clock news, how many people are still not going to believe?
That's correct.
You know, we're going to think it's a political stunt. It's a way to control us with fear. It's this or that. I don't think that belief is necessarily just seeing or hearing something, especially through technology. So it will take a lot more of these, I think, overhead displays of, you know, amazing things like the Phoenix lights,
right?
You know, before people just acknowledge it as a reality. And then we've got to get over that gap of, okay, so it's here. Do we need to fear it? What do we need to do about it?
Do we need to figure out what it is?
Exactly. Or do we just kind of put our heads in the sand and think, okay, well, so far it has not impacted my daily life. And I think that's where the change is. If you have a war in another part of the world, unless you have a brother, a sister, family member, a friend in that war, it does not affect your daily life. You still have to go to work the next day.
That's right.
So I think unless the UFO subject daily affects us, like it's shutting down airports like in China, you know, and they don't fly because of it. Until it starts doing that, I don't think a lot of the people will really feel the impact or care.
Really well put. All right. Well, thanks so much, Ben. It's been absolutely a pleasure.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me on, Martin.
You bet.